enjoyed it.
Okay, thanks. So she said this is work with Malcolm Perry that was on the archive about 2 weeks ago now. So what is the goal of this work? Well, in some sense, the goal is to understand the origin of string perturbation theory from the point of view of M theory or from the membrane. And in particular, what that's going to mean, and I'll explain all this in detail to the gravity people amongst you and give a short introduction about how these things are relevant. And in particular, what this is about is the membrane origin of how the dilaton couples to the string world sheet. Okay, so that's the question. So let me give a very brief introduction, and I apologize to the numerous experts in the audience as I try and tell you what string perturbation theory is. Well, what we do in string theory is we take this partition function and we essentially sum over all topologies and weight the genus of the Riemann surface by the string coupling constant to the power of minus chi, where chi is the Euler characteristic of the Riemann surface. Okay. And then carry out this integral in each case. Okay. Now, of course, for small string coupling, for GS less than 1, this is a perturbative expansion in the genus, where you recall that the Euler characteristic is 2 minus 2g, and g is the genus of your Riemann surface. Okay. Well, just to remind you about why that's put in that way, you can see that if you increase the genus by 1, then in that partition sum, then you're going to weight something with an increased genus of 1 by g string squared. And this is just like what you would do in field theory, whereby for each loop you're going to get, for example, a g squared Young-Mills term. Okay. So this was essentially, I would say, put in by hand in order to match what you would do in field theory in terms of loop counting. And often we write that term gs to the minus chi as e to the minus phi chi, and then we incorporate in the string world sheet action a term which is essentially phi coupling to chi, the world sheet Euler character. And indeed we can then write chi as something local in terms of the integral over the Ricci scalar in two dimensions. Okay. So the goal of this is to understand what the origin of this coupling term is here. Okay. Because that's the term that's going to give us a different weight for each genus in the string world sheet. So before I do that, I've got to explain a little bit what M theory is. So for the purposes of this talk, M theory will be the strong coupling limit of the type 2A string. Its low energy effective action is 11-dimensional supergravity. And in 11-dimensional supergravity, we have two sorts of extended object that appear naturally, which would be the membrane and the 5-brain. And they're known as solutions of 11-dimensional supergravity. And then we can relate those objects to objects in string theory. So in particular, we take M theory, which is 11-dimensional, we wrap it on a circle through usual Kaluza-Klein reduction, and your membrane, whether it wraps, will give you a fundamental string, does not wrap, will give you a D2, and then the 5-brain will give you either a D4 or NS5, and then the momentum around the S1 will be associated to D0 brains. So when people did this originally, this was all done essentially with, for example, matching tensions and charges of the classical solutions, both in 11 dimensions and in 10 dimensions, and also in terms of world volume theories of these objects. And crucially, when you do this, you have to understand what the relationship is between the dilaton, which is in type 2A and is related to the string coupling, and the radius of the 11th dimension, R11, and in doing the matching between all these objects, what you discover is that e to the phi is equal to R11 over L Planck to the power 3 over 2. Okay. So this was this, and then that's why you understand that M theory is the strong coupling limit of the string theory, because when you go to 11 dimensions taking R11 large, then the string coupling blows up. Okay, so this is all old stuff that was done round about 95, 96. But most of this was all done in the classical realm using BPS objects. Okay. So, we're going to want to do a little bit more than that. So let me remind you. So, I'm going to begin with taking the action of the membrane, and I'm going to do a simple double-dimensional reduction, which will be essentially wrapping it around the S1 and showing you that you get the fundamental string. But you don't quite get the fundamental string because that dilaton term is missing. So this is the action of the membrane that will be written in Hau-Tucker form, also called, for various reasons, Polyakov form. And essentially this is very similar to what you would do for the string, only the things to know is that you have here essentially a cosmological constant term in three dimensions and some coupling, some background three form. G is the metric and C is the three form of 11 dimensional supergravity in the background. And then X are the world volume fields, and then we have this auxiliary world volume metric gamma. Okay. Well, the reduction of the membrane follows quite simply. We wrap the membrane, which basically means we identify one of the world volume coordinates, here sigma 3, with x11, that's got winding number 1. We can do some small gauge fixing to write a three-dimensional metric in this form, where this will then be a two-dimensional metric. And then when you do that, what you'll find is that that membrane action will become this, which is the string action, but there is no dilaton term. Okay. So that was roughly the status of how we understood the fundamental string as arising from the membrane. And the origin of this term was a little bit mysterious. Now, I suppose the other thing I should note is that here we have a 1 over alpha prime. This has no alpha prime in. So in some sense, it's already quantumly corrected compared to the classical action in terms of alpha prime. Okay. So, actually I should say, before I continue, is that when I tell you the answer of how to get this term, it will appear very simple. So my challenge is to try and guess how to do it now before you know what the answer is. Okay. So to appreciate some of the issues, what you do is you write that action in M-theory variables using the dictionary I've just given you, and you see you end up with something which is 3 over 2 chi log of R11 over L Planck. So log of R11 is not something that you imagine you're going to get very easily from a classical reduction a la Kaluza-Klein. Also, and what's even harder, is how actually you get chi, which is a two-dimensional topological invariant, from a three-dimensional topological invariant. Well, for a start, there's no unique lift. Okay, so what you want is something where you have S1 cross a Riemann surface. You evaluate a topological invariant on S1 cross a Riemann surface, and then you recover the fact that it should equal the Euler character of the Riemann surface. And just in case anyone is tempted to think it should be the Euler character in three dimensions, the Euler character in three dimensions vanishes. So it's not that. So that will be part of our puzzle, will be to understand how we get the log and how we get an appropriate topological invariant. Okay. So the proposal is going to be very simple. What we're going to do is we're going to examine the partition function for the membrane. We've seen that we've got something like a log. Okay. So it looks like it's coming from some effective action sort of term. And also we've seen that we're alpha prime down, also again indicating that it's some sort of one loop correction in terms of world sheet. And then what we're going to do is generically calculating the membrane partition function is not something that one can do. But we don't need to do that. what we're going to do is restrict to the case where we're on S1 cross a Riemann surface, and we're going to wrap our membrane, of course, on S1 and fix that to be R11. So then, if you like, the full three-dimensional part will sort of go away, but nevertheless be present through zero modes. In other words, we're only going to look at the zero modes on the S1. And then we're going to have, the membrane will also have a Riemann surface. And then we're going to effectively try and calculate what this partition function looks like in this very specific case. Okay. And in particular, what we're going to be concerned with is how the measure on for the gravitational part, I mean, when I say gravitational part, what I mean here is I'm integrating over metrics, modulo diffeomorphisms, and thus dividing by the group of diffeomorphisms, and then we're going to find out how that measure is going to scale in this specific instance. Any questions about that so far? Great. Okay. So to do that, we follow what any good quantum field theory person will do, which is we're going to have to gauge fix, and I'll describe the gauge fixing that's necessary to do this. We then write the space of metrics in three dimensions as an orthogonal decomposition into pure diffeomorphisms times physical metric deformations. Okay, in other words, stuff that are not diffeos. And then in doing that, that will introduce a Jacobian, which, if you like, you can write that Jacobian by introducing ghosts or not, that's up to you. And then we will integrate over the pure diffeomorphisms, and that will cancel the volume of the diffeomorphism group. And that will be, and then that will leave us with an integral over the moduli with the appropriate measure. Okay. So it's this part five is what we really want, because that's really telling us in the path integral the stuff that we should be really physically integrating over. Okay. So let's do some of this. So, for the case of S1 cross Riemann surface with fixed radius for the S1, the moduli are going to be the same as for the Riemann surface. Okay? Because the only other modulus I had was here for the S1, and I suppose also some off-diagonal bits, but I'm going to insist that they vanish. And then I'm going to be left with the same moduli space as just for the Riemann surface, or at least it'd be isomorphic. And then we can also see, though it's not immediately apparent, that the three-dimensional diffeomorphism group will go to two-dimensional diffeos times vial. Okay. So let me explain a little bit more about that, because that's not immediately obvious. Okay. So this was done already a while ago by Anna Ashukaro, Capusta, and Steli, and what they showed was essentially the origin of the conformal group of the string from the membrane. And what you have to do this is be a little bit more clever with your dimensional reduction. So you don't just take x11 equal to sigma 3, but x11 sigma 3 plus some function. And then what you can show is essentially that the vial symmetry is hidden in that F. Okay. So when I did the dimensional reduction and fixed x11 equal to sigma 3, I was also fixing the vial symmetry on the string. And then you can show that diffeomorphisms in three dimensions, one of the three-dimensional components of this is the vector field generating diffeomorphisms in three dimensions, is related to the vial transformation for the string. Okay. Now,
it's not obvious, but it's like that F looks like a translation in the third direction.
Yeah, what you're doing, if you like, is it's easier to see if you go back and think of it in Nambu-Goto form. because what you've got is you've got an action which is minus square root gamma, okay? And then what you're going to do is basically say that I can take gamma 2, then do some vowel transformation here, some power, and then I've got R11, which, well.
Oh, it's a rescaling.
Yeah, it's a rescaling of R11. And then, of course, that will be left invariant. Okay. So it's the fact that, you know, in the end, when the dust settles, you've got a determinant of a three-dimensional thing, and if it's a product, and then you can rescale the two-part and leave the one-part the same. Now, you sort of have to be a little bit more careful when you do it in the Polyakov form, but you can show it still works. But that's the easiest way to see it. Okay. So our 3D Diffeos under the circumstance goes to 2D Diffeos times Weyl, which is good because they're the symmetries of the string. And then what we're going to do is go to our favorite textbook and work out how to split the metric into pieces that are pure Diffeos times Weyl, or pure conformal pieces, and then physical pieces. So to that end, it's useful to write the variation of the metric here in terms of the following operator P1, which is essentially the trace-free piece of diffeomorphisms, and then here I've got the Weyl and the trace. And then we can introduce the conjugate of P1, so P1 is a map from vector field into symmetric two tensors, and the conjugate is the vice versa, and these operators will be useful in forming the Jacobian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you assuming that your free metric is just the metric on the Riemann surface, the product of a metric on the Riemann surface?
It's a product, yeah. I'm assuming it's a product.
Orthogonal product.
An orthogonal product, yeah. So that's an assumption to begin with.
Yeah, now why? I mean, in the membrane theory, you would normally, that seems like a big restriction on
the
metric.
Absolutely. So in the full membrane theory, there's no absolute reason why you should restrict to that. So what we're using is our knowledge of M-theory relating to string theory, which is that when we, which
if you like, you can
examine from looking at the classical reduction, that when you do that, then you get the string. Okay. So ordinarily, you ought to integrate over everything, and certainly not necessarily just the simple S1 cross Riemann surface. You ought to integrate over all three-dimensional metrics. But if you like, what you've done is, once you've got this classical dictionary that the simple reduction goes to the string, the other stuff will go to D2 brains. Because I'm looking for something on the string, I'm going to argue, well, let's look at just this sector of the membrane partition function. So there will be other sectors too, and then we know what they will be in terms of string theory. They're going to be D2 brain states and D0 brains, other brain states. Yeah. Oh, you're saying if I'm wrapped and then I've just got some off-diagonal components. Okay. So, okay. You can do that too. And it won't change what I'm doing. If you want, I'll show you later because I'm going to... Yeah, well, you see, what happens... Okay. Yeah. Okay. So if you... Okay. So the point is, if I've got some components like this and this, which are off diagonal, then when you put it into the action, you could integrate them out, and then you won't be left with anything physical in the end. Okay. Or if you like, I can also choose some Diffeos to take them away, provided that the bundle is trivial. So to see that, if you think of what you would do when you would reduce this thing, okay, then you'd end up with some effective action in two dimensions. But actually, provided the integral of F over the world sheet is zero, then this will be a pure gradient, which I can remove with diffeomorphisms. Happy? Well.
I'll save money. Yeah, correct. let's just finish this by asking, what does it mean, what's the physical constraint associated with making the interval of f and zero?
So I would say that means that you've got, so if I view this thing as Riemann surface with an S1 bundle over it, then integral of f is basically saying it is zero, it's basically saying it's a trivial bundle. Okay. And then if it's a trivial bundle, then A can be written everywhere as D of something. I think for the usual n theory restriction, you normally say that you have S1 producted with the 10-dimensional space of the type 2A string. So for connecting to the ordinary type 2A string, certainly with constant dilaton, then that's fine.
You could ask what kind of configuration you get at 10 dimensions that you don't have.
Yeah. Well, there are some, of course. I mean, if you have a D6 brain...
Yeah, that's something else.
I'm going to do topologically non-trivial situations later, so then I think we can go there then. If you give me this now, and then we can discuss ways in which you can deform it later. Okay, but I mean it's important that I'm making that restriction, and then the question is, you know, if you remove that restriction, is what I'm doing going to go through or not? That's an important question. Okay. Right, where were we? Okay, yeah, we've got these operators, P1, P1 dagger, and they're useful in determining what will be important to us. So first of all, I'm going to consider the case, because it's simple, I'll later relax this constraint, where the genus of the Riemann surface is greater than or equal to 2. This is because P1, in that case, doesn't have any zero modes. So I will go back and consider the sphere and the torus later, but for now let's do this. Then the dimension of the moduli space is given by the kernel of P1 dagger, which is equal to -3 chi. Okay, so that you can just check from any book on Riemann surface theory. And the Jacobian that does your split is given by det P1 dagger P1 to the half. So here you can see why I needed to have P1 have no zero modes, because otherwise this Jacobian would not make sense. Okay, so later we'll relax that. And then when we do that, then we see that we have this partition function. This is all the gauge stuff that's just going to cancel. And then we've got the Jacobian, which is nice. And then the integral over 6g minus 6 moduli. But then that moduli is going to need a measure. We need a measure on the moduli space. Okay. So, what is the measure on moduli space? And what you're going to do is calculate it from the norms of so-called quadratic differentials, or from the variations of the metric. So essentially, you do the most natural thing that's allowed by symmetries and so on, which is essentially that you look at some fluctuation of the metric and you basically contract it appropriately. And the traces are not going to be important, so that's not physical. Okay? And then integrate it over the world volume. And this is where there's the difference between the two-dimensional and three-dimensional cases. Because what we're going to want to do is relate, I mean, I should say, those of you familiar, this would look identical to the case for string theory, only what I want to do is see how the measure of moduli space between the membrane theory, the three-dimensional theory on S1 cross a Riemann surface, is related to when I just have the Riemann surface, which is the string case. So there's nothing. Okay. So the trace pieces are not physical deformations. So I can always remove the trace, I think, because that's part of the diffeos.
So it means your case tracing conditions against the trace.
Yeah. And so I mean I could have just cut that part out, but people often put that in. And, okay. It's essentially the usual thing that when you work out a metric or moduli space, if you've got an engaged symmetry, you can always add in some piece or not, and or remove a piece so it respects your gauge symmetry. So then what we want to do is evaluate this for S1 across a Riemann surface, where we just have zero modes on the S1. So we're going to do this integral in three dimensions, but then there's nothing depends on the S1. So we're just going to get an R11 in here. Okay. And indeed, therefore, if you like, the measure of the three-dimensional thing will be related to the two-dimensional thing by square root of R11. Okay. Now, normally, you wouldn't worry about this, because this would just be some overall normalization that you could just divide through by in the end. But let's keep it. So what I'm doing, I've not told you, so normally, if we're just doing string theory, that measure could be quite complicated and depend on all sorts of stuff to do with Riemann surfaces, Beltrami differentials, and all sorts of fancy stuff.
I just want to be straight, at what point did your R model the radius of some space-time background embed itself in this calculation about Weinberg-Wilms?
Oh. So that's good. Yeah, when I've said I'm wrapping once, I'm identifying and I'm picking coordinates, I then, once I've done that, I've got to have the radius of the membrane S1 be the same as the M-theory S1. So then that's how that arises. Okay, it's the fact that I'm wrapping.
Okay, the question of where that comes from, the full membrane is much like this question of non-trivial.
Yeah, I mean, this is my point of the fact you wouldn't normally know to do that or make that special if it were not for the fact that in the classical theory you've got this dictionary relating stuff in membrane theory to stuff in string theory.
Right.
And it's the fact that the once-wrap membrane is the fundamental string that tells you to look at this sector.
There's an overall factor. Well, you've got the... You're saying that the distance around in the space-time has to be the same as the
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you're independently. What does that come from?
That comes from me. That comes from exactly wrapping the membrane. When I wrap the membrane.
If you start with just the full interval over all membrane metrics.
Yeah.
And presumably you need to have some argument that cases where the membrane size physically wraps once dominates that pattern.
Okay.
Yeah, but even if it wraps once, you're not guaranteed that the Polyakov metric, so to speak, is the same as the baseline metric. I think you need to get right that also dominates the center. Yeah. It certainly is true that
no.
The stationary point will have that feature. In classical terms. Yeah, the equation is going to be wrong. Right. So they're both. Yeah. The equation functions are embedded in the spaceline.
I'm sorry.
So
I'm a little bit confused. You're saying that if I wrap a membrane, you're saying...
Well, okay, we're more familiar with this statement just in term theory,
yeah,
where we know that actually the equations of motion tell you that the world sheet metric is not the same as the world sheet metric, it's only the same up to scale.
Oh, but no, but that's because that's string theory. That's not true for the membrane.
Okay, but in the case of the membrane, it could be that it probably is true that that equation of motion is replaced by not. Move the upper scale from Congress, but that's only an on-shelf state, correct?
That's true. But, okay, that's true for the metric, but I think this is a little bit... This is a little bit more, right? Because it's the periodicity of the coordinate as well. So it's not just a case of what the metric is in that direction. I'm integrating and identifying. Exactly, good.
It's clear to me that once you've chosen the gauge, you're guaranteed for all configurations. It probably is true that the equation of motion for all configurations is going to match up.
I don't.
Maybe you should move on.
Yeah. I think. Well, okay. So. Okay. So doing this thing. Okay. I don't see how else you're going to get. If I've identified the. No, sorry. Look. If I've identified the membrane, I have to do it with a certain degree of periodicity. Okay. And I'm doing the same thing as space time if it's going to be wrapped once. What's a coordinate? But the thing that's invariant is there's an invariance which is the overall length of the S1. Okay? And you can't tell me that, I can shift between coordinates and metric things, but there's still an invariant length there.
At one point, you said, I believe, that your question is there.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, that's right. There's the size of the S1, but I fixed that by demanding that that it matched the space time.
Yes, you have fixed that.
Yeah.
That's an important
issue. I would say if you wrap, then you have to.
This is a discussion we should save.
Okay. Okay. So going ahead with this. Thing, then I get the measure in moduli space for each fluctuation goes like square root R11 compared to the two-dimensional case. So then, when we insert that into the full measure here, we end up with R11 to the 3g minus 3 compared to the two-dimensional moduli. Normalized two-dimensionally. So then when we put that into the partition function, okay, then we end up with R11 3g minus 3 there. And then we use our dictionary that R11 to the 3 over 2 is e to the phi, and chi is 2 minus 2g. And then we can write the thing in terms of two-dimensional moduli, but with a minus phi chi coupling in the effective action here. Okay. So then you see that the phi chi term is essentially coming from a renormalization. Well, when I say renormalization, it's coming from a shift in the normalization of the measure between the three-dimensional measure of a moduli space and the two-dimensional measure of a moduli space. And then, yeah, you can just write it is minus phi chi, and then it's in the effective action. Okay. So, I've said this is remarkable, because I think it was remarkable. Okay. It was not put in by hand. You've just begun with the partition function, and then you've restricted to some specific case, which is may or may not be justified, but at least if you follow your nose from what you know looking at the classical solutions. And then you see that in order to relate that partition function to the string partition function, you've had to shift some normalization of the moduli space measure. And that's given you exactly the dilaton coupling to the Wilczek-Euler character. Okay. So I'm not sure that had to happen. Okay. And this is what you really want to do, right? I mean, you know, if you believe in M theory, then you don't want to start putting in a perturbation theory in by hand. Okay. Okay. So I've got a so it was easiest to see when P1 had no zero modes, but now I've got to tidy this up a little bit more. And look at the case where we have zero modes, essentially conformal killing vectors, which is when we have the torus and the sphere. And now what we need to do is modify the measure so as not to integrate over zero modes. So what that means is you put a little prime everywhere. And prime means don't integrate over zero modes. And then what you do is then you rewrite this as the integral over something that does include zero modes, but then divide out by the volume of the zero mode. Okay. So this is just removing the zero modes, and then I rewrite it to include zero modes, so I end up with the same measure, and then divide by this volume here. Okay. So you're sort of dividing out by the thing that you've added. Okay. So this is a normal treatment. And then when we do that, we're again wanting to see how conformal killing vectors scale in terms of their normalization. And it's the same thing. You're going to integrate over the whole surface. And so you'll pick up a factor of R11 again for the norm, giving you a square root of R11 that will scale the volume of the kernel of P1. Okay. So it's going to be the same thing. Only now, you'll get the fact the volume of the kernel of P1, this is the membrane P1, is going to go like R11 to the half the dimension of the kernel of P1, volume of the kernel of P1 tilde, where that's the string one. Okay? So it's the same thing again, only now with the norm of the conformal killing vectors. And then we're going to use Riemann-Roch theorem, relating the difference of the kernel of P1 dagger to the dimension of the kernel of P1, as follows. And again, look at the bit where we're integrating over metrics, and then we get the R11, the dimension of the kernel P1 dagger, that's the moduli space, and then minus the dimension of the kernel P1, that comes from dividing out by the zero mode piece, and again, using Riemann-Roch, that's minus 3 chi, and then again we get the dilaton coupling. Okay. So again, we get some effective action sort of piece. Okay. Now, lots of discussion. Okay, so this did not have to happen. I mean, in principle, it could have been anomalous. Okay. Because here, the connection is made not at the level of the classical actions, but in the partition function, and in particular through the measures. So I would say this is an argument that you should take membrane theory perhaps more seriously than people have done in the past, because, well, it works. I mean, there's still problems with membrane theory, of course, but I think people who I asked this question to before I did this said, well, you know, it doesn't really have to happen, right? I mean, you know, or you could have had to have, in fact, this is what originally when I was trying to do this problem, originally I tried to add things to the membrane action so that under some dimensional reduction, under some evaluation, you would get this term. And that would be a bit ugly, because it's quite hard to add things to the membrane and still have all the right properties in terms of degrees of freedom. Okay. But you don't...
specific to membrane. Suppose you started with three grain and started from some ambient 12-dimensional
theory. Yeah, you're saying if I just restrict to a zero mode sector on anything.
Starting from all the finder, I mean, with what you call dimensional.
Yeah, I mean, what you need to do is make sure that you end up with, in the end, a classical string theory also. So it's the fact that you get a matching from two sides. You get the fact that you get the membrane will classically reduce to give you the ordinary string. And the, well, it, but it, it depends what you get. You see, you've got to tell me what are you beginning with in whatever number of dimensions you're in, but it's also the fact that you match up to the stuff that exists in 11. It's the fact that I began with something in 11, okay, and then I had this relationship between the dilaton and R11, which was coming from all sorts of matching of tensions of brains and so on. So then it's the fact that you then get the same answer. It could have been you did this, and then you got a different power of R11 to, I don't know, 5 over 4.
Something a little Christian that comes back to this earlier question. I think it's, maybe along the wrong track, let me raise it. So if you look at the distance around that circle,
yeah,
again, you can measure that distance in the space-time vector or in the world volume.
Yeah, sure.
And so, for example, you could change that distance as measured in the world volume metric by multiplying the world volume metric by some factor.
Mm-hmm.
You could take a different metric, twice as big, or two times the original metric scale. And I think that same scaling would also come through all of your formulas. I think it would, you'd get log, in other words.
Are you telling me that you can shift the dilaton by a constant?
Well, I think I'm telling you that unless you fix this, well, the scaling, you could actually eliminate this agreement that you looked at. I think that's what's worrying. Because you could get a term that compensates that, you know, log and all that by doing it.
I think.
So somehow there's got to be, it is, I think, important.
So I think the structure is that there's an integral.
I think
that each value of that modulus seems as if we scale this transfer by a corresponding thing. But on the other hand, we agree that classical solutions have this modulus fixed to a certain value. So very plausible that integral can be done and give a finite degree answer of p at the classical value. But something else. It's an extra step that perhaps should be further.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the point is as well, if you're going to want to relate this to a string, is to imagine what is the equivalent step that you'd be doing in string theory as integrating over all the S1s. That'd be integrating over the background in some sense.
No? This is not a degree of freedom you see.
Exactly, yeah.
It comes about precisely because the membrane is three-dimensional and hence the metric has this additional moduli.
Exactly. No, exactly. That's sort of what I'm saying.
In your calculation, you know, if you want to make the assumption the metric's a product of the circle and stuff, you know, we can sort of accept that. But I think at the very least you should, you know, include the moduli of the circle. I mean, you basically imposed a classical field equation.
Yeah.
So
I guess what I'm trying to say is I agree with you completely. But I'm saying if you want to match to something that exists in the string, because in the end we wanted something that was on the world sheet of a string, then I have to therefore make restrictions in the membrane theory, or else I won't be able to match it to something in the string.
Well, the security of what you're doing is taking quantum membrane expression,
yeah,
saying I get out sensible quantum
theory. I'm saying I get the dilaton as something that's coming from that measure, yeah. In that restriction.
So you have to properly define the quantum membrane expression as a quantum membrane expression.
And speaking for myself, I would expect that if you completed this program with an outline, that you would get an answer you'd like. If you didn't put it in your work, presumably classical stationary point dominance. Awesome. Right.
Probability amplitude here, right?
What's that?
We're not going to be happy with some sort of wave function with possible probabilities. There's supposed to be a specific number coming out that you can sort of calculate.
Maybe it's beautiful. It could be exactly straight. It could be something we do sharply. It's a curve of a small string. Yeah. Even those you would make
us
very happy. Right. Yeah. Okay.
The derivative is what's over there. There's no derivative in that logic. Well, you would have an action if you scaled with it, except for the cosmological terms. So you have two pieces that scale different ways.
That's separate pieces.
So you can call
them. This is the Gaussian interval problem.
Yeah, I mean, you can.
Well, the curve.
Maybe.
Okay.
So another question here. The other coupling is, you know, from a string point of view, it's related to conformal anomaly.
Yeah.
So how is it?
It's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I've tried to think about that, but yeah. That's a good question. Because it's hard to think of an appropriate symmetry that's anomalous in three dimensions. But, yeah. Okay. So, the other thing that you should ask is what happens if the dilaton is not constant? So, if the dilaton's not constant, well, I mean, it's fine if the dilaton is not constant over space-time, but it's constant over the string. The issue comes if I can no longer write this thing as phi chi, which is certainly the case if phi depends on the world sheet. And again, I have no answers for that. But what I would say is there's also something fishy, I don't know about fishy, but there's also something generally problematic about that in other cases. So, for example, in the same circumstance, then that also breaks kappa symmetry. So you can't even have a Green-Schwarz version of the string for this case also. So that's also slightly mysterious. You could try and include some Kaluza-Klein modes that would correspond to incorporating these zeros. And you could try and have a background that was topologically non-trivial. So instead of having, which is related to what you said before, instead of having S1 cross M10, you could have it to be something like a Kaluza-Klein monopole, and that would correspond to some sort of D6 background. And then you could try and then, if you like, wrap around that circle that was fibered, and then see if you could still make sense of it. Okay. And yeah. And that'll be, and then I think you cannot take out the off diagonal parts in that metric. And well, finally, I've said, are there any other topologies in three dimensions that allow a similar expansion? Okay, in the sense of I suppose I agree. I mean, there's no reason, just beginning in three dimensions, why you're allowed to select out this sector. At least it's not obvious from what I've done. All I've said is that if you pick that sector, then you'll get the right answer. But then it's tempting to wonder if you could pick something else, like, for example, Seifert manifolds, which are Riemann surfaces with S1 fibers over them. And then there are other topological invariants where there's a similar scaling of the moduli space that allows you to come up with some sort of perturbative expansion of the membrane in a similar form. But I don't know. So let me end there. Thanks.
Do we have more questions for Dave?